Welcome to Talk World Radio, a half-hour discussion of politics as if the people mattered. I'm David Swanson.
This week on Talk World Radio, we're speaking with Hartzell Gray from Kansas City, Missouri, who is running as a Democrat in Missouri's 4th Congressional District. His website is HartzellForCongress.com. That's H-A-R-T-Z-E-L-L ForCongress.com. Hartzell Gray, welcome to Talk World Radio.
Oh my gosh, thank you so much for having me. It's an honor. And from one radio guy to another, it's nice to be on the other side of an intro. I'm getting used to it now, you know? Usually I'm the one that has to bring other folks on.
Maybe getting radio people into government is the answer. The television personalities aren't working out so well.
Hey, the people are saying it. The people are saying it.
Have you run for public office before? Is this the first time? Why did you decide to get into this race?
Yeah, so this is the first time I ever run for public office. You know, I've organized nationally. I'm the national coordinator for a group called Young Progressive Democrats of America, which is, you know, our parent org is Progressive Democrats of America. But also here in Kansas City, I've organized with tenants, organized with climate activists, have organized with our folks here on the ground, you know. And on top of that, which I think is just a unique perspective, is I'm a radio and TV guy. I'm a media personality. So I've gotten a chance to, as I have grown as an organizer and an activist, I've also been able to help platform our folks whose voices seem so often to not be as loud as they should be. And so, yeah, I'm born and raised here in town. I was born into, I think, a radical tradition. And so I think that this time requires us to meet this moment, the urgency of now that MLK so often preached about. And I think that the question we all should be asking is how we can do the most amount of good for the most amount of people in the most efficient amount of time. We've got folks who have found their way in that, and that could be from starting petitions, going to the courts. And what I've done is run for office.
You're running against an incumbent Republican who I think got over 70% of the votes last time. We all know the power of incumbency, of gerrymandering, of essentially legalized bribery, of corrupt corporate media. But we know that sometimes all those things can lose. So how are you going to win?
Yeah, all those things are going to lose, my friend. Let's not step on the lead, my brother. Listen, someone has to fall on their sword when these clowns are trying to take away our democracy. You know, gerrymandering, what's the opposite of it? It's dummy mandering. What the Republicans, and more specifically what the president wanted, was a 7-1 map here in Missouri, because the only current seat that is protected by the Voting Rights Act, let's knock on wood, is St. Louis. And so that's protected. They wanted to make everything else Republican. And so, long story short, the 5th district that was primarily, think of Kansas City, Missouri, has now been split into three, the 6th, the 5th, and the 4th. And again, without getting into all the weeds of it, you know, someone, when that happens, you know, there's got to be someone who has to fall on that sword whose district gets diluted. And that is Mark Alford. What was before these illegal and unconstitutional maps was an R plus 40 plus is now an R plus 18 to 20. You know, we've got Democrats who are currently overperforming nationwide by about 15 points. You put that on this race, now we're within the margin. Also take into account that in Jackson County, which was the biggest county in the 5th, is still the biggest county now in the 4th. This is going to blow your mind because it blew mine. In a presidential year, 2024, Jackson County, the biggest county, turnout was down 34%. That is unbelievable. And so what we have here is an opportunity to activate first-time voters, folks who are disillusioned. We've got the folks on the ground but in our urban areas, but also our suburbs, also our rural areas. And so now you've got something that is not just a pipe dream. We've got a chance to flip this seat in what I believe is going to be one of the most important races in the country. We are one of the first races in a post-assault on our democracy, this gerrymandering wave of this, you know, authoritarianism from the White House. And so we're going to be one of the first to fight back, stand up and say, we're going to flip the seat.
And so this guy you mentioned, Mark Alford, he's only the incumbent in part of the new district, right? Not the whole district. And people didn't vote in masses. And there's usually a vote against the president's party 2 years in. And there ought to be this time, unlike any time ever before, right?
I mean, that's the thing that I think is so illuminating now for me as I'm knocking doors in these new areas. Again, no matter where these boundaries would have been, campaigning is relational. It is making sure you got your phone bankers, you got to make sure you're knocking doors, you're canvassing, but also you're, making sure you're pumping up those folks who's already are doing this. We've got folks who are wine moms in the suburbs who are now starting Democratic clubs in places you never would have thought. And also on top of that, it's just meeting folks and more, at the store, at church. And so none of that changes just because the boundaries are different. We all deserve everything. This is a campaign that is so rooted in love because all of us deserve everything. And so what I'm finding in these new areas is that, they voted for Trump one, two, three times, may vote for him even more if they get a chance to. But they also understand that Donald Trump is an imperfect vessel. And so they are willing to take his worst angels as long as Mark Alford stands in the way of it, just to make sure, soothe out the president's worst intentions. And they're realizing that Mark Alford is not doing that. As our wheat markets are being decimated, soy decimated, homes being foreclosed, private equity, which is in bed with these oligarchs and the Trump administration. They're taking our apartments in downtown Kansas City, the urban areas, but also your apartment in rural Warsaw, Missouri. Not just taking their farmland, maybe sometimes it's the same company, but also their housing. And so we got to connect these dots. I guess not even connecting dots, it's making sure our folks know that we're walking with you as you figure it out on your own. And if we can put all those things, the MAGA of it all, if we can put that on Alford, then I think we can help wake up our folks. And also that's how we're going to, I think, make this tent bigger. And that's how we make history. We make the biggest upset in the history of Missouri congressional politics.
Sounds very good to me. You've got a terrific platform on the website at heartsoulforcongress.com. What are some of your priorities if you're elected?
Yeah, it's guaranteeing the basic. We got the big four or five. It is taxing the rich and redistributing that wealth to the working class. I mean, this is unbelievable that you have one person, Elon Musk, that owns more than the bottom 53% of the wealth in this country. But it's not just the cartoon villains that are Elon and Zuckerberg and Bezos, again, helping to connect these dots for our folks without talking down to them. Because I can say to my 90-year-old grandmother who can't stand Elon, and I say, well, man, I guess what? It's not just Elon, because the top 1%, not even folks who are bad people, they just own that top 1%, the bottom 93% of the wealth of this country. And so when I can say confidently, that we're not coming for you, Grandma. We are coming for the billionaires who are actually buying up your nursing homes. And so we're going to tax the rich. We're going to redistribute that wealth. We're going to get all of this dark money out of politics. We don't take any corporate money. One of the first groups to reach out to us was AIPAC before we even went public for our campaign. That shows you how gross that this is. And we got to just dismantle that. Citizens United has got to go because so much of why we don't have my next pillars of our platform, universal health care, Medicare for all, whatever we want to call it is yours. Guaranteed housing, guaranteed job with a living wage of at least $25. See, how we get all of that is by getting all this money out of politics. It is by divesting from a war machine, a military industrial complex, just empire that would make money for the war profiteers. On behalf of genocide, on behalf of forever wars. And some of those same folks, those war profiteers, are also the same corporate folks who have given dark money and have won campaigns. I mean, it's all related. And we can holistically approach this in a way that can make our folks whole, make our working class folks materially whole. And I think those five planks of the campaign, it speaks to, like we mentioned earlier, the urgency of now. It's not just that I believe Medicare for all is the way to go. It's that I want you, no matter who you are, no matter your faith, no matter your identification, no matter who you are, you deserve health care. Not just that I've read in a book that Medicare for all is going to save us money and make sure you're rural hospitals can stay in business. You know, it's not just that I want public transit because I believe in a livable city. It's because I need my folks to be able, my neighbors, to get to work on time because they need to make sure that they can clock in to work because they've got to put food on their table and they're sick and tired of having to put groceries back when they're at the checkout line because they have to choose between this product, this food, these vegetables versus am I going to be able to pay rent, which is also due. And so, you know, I come back to the humanity and that none of these things are think pieces. This is happening right now here in my Missouri 4th, but all across the country, our folks are hurting. And it's not just hurting, it's they're hurting because of an intentional attack from these big moneyed interests, from an authoritarian government that would sick out goons, this 21st century stormtroopers and ICE. I mean, we have to meet this moment in a radical transformational vision, I believe, is the only way we're going to be able to do this.
Very, very well said. I watched these people in Minneapolis saying, I've just become an activist today for the first time in my life because the, you know, the Nazis are coming for everyone, not yeah. just the immigrants in my city.
Yep.
People in every other city and town and countryside could not wait until that moment when they themselves are personally targeted in their yep. city. Imagine what we could do. The platform you lay out from Tax the Rich on down, as far as I know, is extremely popular in the polling, but also extremely rare to hear from candidates, even from elected officials, maybe even more so. If I speak with candidates, I usually have to wait till the end of the show and say, what about taxing the rich too? Could you add that in there? You know, but the one thing that surprises me that I wouldn't have even thought to ask about is the jobs guarantee everybody a job. I think rare as guaranteeing an income is, that's more common a proposal than guaranteeing a job. So I'm curious, why is that in there and how would it work?
Yeah, because FDR said necessitous men are not free. We can update that. Necessitous folks, we are not free. Folks, you know, to double down on the FDR, you would be shocked how much folks are willing to give up their liberty in search of a meal. And so we got to make sure that we do guarantee these jobs. And I'm not just talking urban jobs. I'm not just talking suburb jobs. I'm talking jobs for everyone in rural America as well. Guarantee that job. That isn't just mean you're going to be a farmhand. What do you want to do? Like, let's start making sure that our folks are materially made whole. And how do we do it? Well, it's like what we just talked about with taxing the rich. If we are going to preach and say the billionaires should not exist, then why are we talking about 1% and 2% and 3% after a billion? No. Everything after $1 billion is going to be taxed at 100%. Like, why are we beating around the bush here? If you don't believe billionaires should exist, then let's back up what you preach, because there is no reality where someone should make or amass that amount of money with these wealth discrepancy in this country. Over 800,000 folks we have are unhoused in this country. 30,000 vets. I mean, think about, like we said, the story of the single mom who has to put groceries back because if she gets too much, she's not going to make rent. I mean, it's inexcusable. And so not only are we going to tax those billionaires, we're going to make sure that we invest in our folks. So yes, not just Medicare for all, not just major climate action, not just housing, but yes, a guaranteed job with union labor protections that will make sure that our folks will want to work with their government, will want to know that they have security, that they're invested in. What a concept. Because so often right now, maybe only, the working class, their interactions with their government is when they are getting beaten down from their government. And so it is time for us to reclaim this American promise. And I think that American promise includes a guaranteed job with a living wage.
You know, Hartzell Gray, if you were on CNN right now, you would have been asked in a screaming voice at least 8 times already, how are you going to pay for it? And one answer, obviously, is tax the billionaires and the multimillionaires, and you get hundreds of billions at least once, and some smaller amount the next year and the next year. But there's also that $1 trillion every year into military spending, which our president put on social media recently. He'd like to switch that over to $1.5 trillion a year.
This is made up numbers. I mean, my brother, what are we? I mean, this is unbelievable, but also, how do we get to this point? The Biden administration also even overfunded what the Department of Defense, what the Pentagon was asking. And now we have led, that has led us, that lack of moral clarity and truly on the side of peace, that lack of vision has led now to this maniac in the White House proposing a $1.5 trillion defense budget. And what is also just tragic and upsetting, but also why we are fighting in this, is that just yesterday, I believe, there was a vote basically essentially, you know, certifying this foreign policy agenda that was laid out by the Trump administration. Every Democrat in my state voted for that. So this is a bipartisan issue. Every representative in my state, period, voted for a foreign policy that is rooted in occupation and imperialism and genocide and colonialism and exploitation and extraction.
Yeah.
We had not a single bit of spine shown by anyone in the Show Me State. That is unacceptable, and we're going to make sure that does not happen anymore.
You know, I look at these pie charts of federal discretionary budget, the budget that the Congress oversees each year, how they choose where our money goes. And it's, you know, it's about $1 trillion for militarism and about $500 billion for everything else. And Trump wants $1.5 trillion for militarism, which if he just rearranged the pie, there would be nothing for anything else. I've never seen a congressional candidate do this, and maybe you won't do it either, but if you were to put out what you think that budget pie should look like, what would it look like in rough terms? Like, how big a slice would go to what?
Oh, we are going to listen, and the defense budget can't pass an audit, so they are no longer in a position to call their own shot on this one. No, we are going to fundamentally rethink everything about this war machine. I mean, I don't know if I have the exact numbers, but I know that I am tired of our folks and my kids in my district having to go into debt, to lunch debt, because they don't have a guaranteed meal. What, $30 billion, my friend, $30 billion could cancel out hunger in this country. $30 billion, and he just proposed $1.5 trillion to engage in surveillance of American citizens, to assault the working class around the world. But they say we can't afford Medicare for all. They say that we can't afford to make major climate action. We can't afford to wipe student loans, even though the president absolutely has that authority in the Higher Education Act. I mean, who is, you know, one of the things we say in the organizing space, my friend, is who is your city for? Who is your government for? You know, yes, a better world is possible, because we have to acknowledge the reality of who our electeds think that this city is for, this country is for. We force the issue and say, no, it's for us. It is for the people. And if you are not going to match that energy and that mentality, then you have got to go, because we have no time now for unserious people. And we need people. We need a collectivism. We need folks to come out of a movement, because that's how you ground yourself. That's how you're accountable. That's how I know that I need to divest from the war machine. Because when I'm talking to people, they say, why we got all this money for bombs when I got potholes right in front of my business? In fact, I have no business traffic now because of all these potholes and the infrastructure that's not being invested in, because now I got no place for my folks to park. I got no place for them to put their bikes. You know, these are real conversations that, while they may not have the Excel numbers to divest from the Pentagon, we're going to find ways to divest from the Pentagon and make sure that our folks are taken care of. But yes, it is going to be a fundamental rearticulation of that pie chart, my friend.
There seems to me to be a really deep unseriousness about even our best members of Congress, because every year they pass this military spending bill and nobody organizes a group, a caucus to get votes of no unless the money goes down. Instead, they do things like introduce legislation that, if it were to pass both houses and override a veto, would cut $100 billion from military spending. And that sounds really nice, but the military spending bill every year goes up tens or hundreds of billions of dollars. If they were to even pass that bill to cut $100 billion, they could just increase the thing by another $100 billion and nothing would have happened. Like, if you were in Congress, would you try to organize people not to make nice statements the day after the votes? I voted no, but to organize people before the vote to try to block the military spending.
Absolutely. The fact that we can't even get the minority leader in the House, Rep. Jeffries, to commit to defunding ICE as a way to leverage the Senate minority leader, Chuck Schumer, to not, that's an abdication of duty. That is capitulation to this colonialism. That is capitulation to the president. From our supposed opposition party. This is my opposition party. This is the best we got. When you are an elected official in the halls of Congress, you are one of you are given an immense power, an immense responsibility. And to not use that to the fullest extent, to not use your bully pulpit, not just in DC, but at your state houses, at your local municipalities. Because you know what? If Hakeem Jeffries and Senator Schumer, if they were actually in their communities, I think they would hear every single one of their constituents say, we need to defund this Gestapo. But you know what? They're not in their communities anymore. Mm-hmm. But they got a whole lot of donors that are in their inboxes and in their phones. And so, yes, we have to organize like our life depends on it, because, David, our life depends on this. And so at every level of power, at every opportunity, we have to find ways to force the issue, even if that means I've called for the impeachment of everybody in this administration. And I mean it. It's not a throwaway. This is where we are. That's how corrupt these gangsters are. And no, we don't have the power to convict and remove, but show some spine. Every Democrat, you can make it a carousel line, should be every day filing articles of impeachment against the president, Secretary of Homeland Security, the Department of War, Hegseth. I mean, this isn't a joke. This is real. Show our folks that you're doing something. And so, yes, that to answer your, it's, I get worked up for this, because it's like they think this is some sort of, again, thought experiment or some sort of chess game. And what I'm saying is it's not a game.
It's absolutely not a game. We've got about 5 minutes left. Hartzell Gray, we're facing greater risk every year of climate catastrophe and greater risk every year of nuclear catastrophe. What should Congress be doing?
I'm on board with what Senator Sanders has proposed. We need a complete moratorium on these data centers. Because right now what we are seeing, our climate is under a complete crisis. We are getting no help from the federal government. The IRA subsidies, which were just a drop in the bucket of what we even needed to begin with. In fact, a little bit more carrot than stick than what it needed to be. But even that we have seen roll back. And so what can we do in the immediate and your municipal levels and your state levels? What I will always argue on a congressional level is, yes, a complete moratorium on these data centers. I think we need to be done with them, to be honest with you. We need to continue to talk about, yes, AI protections or this machine learning protections, but also it is a climate issue. It's a labor issue. It is a worker issue, because it's being sold as these incredible worker positions. I know that's what they're telling folks in my district, but they're short-term jobs for what is essentially going to be working for our own displacement. We are essentially putting together the pieces that are going to displace us and with no protection. So yes, I am running a climate-centric campaign, because it's part of the purview that we deserve everything, right? Because when we say, again, in that organizing space, a better world is possible, well, we are supposed to then not just say what we think as progressives, as socialists, we're supposed to make that happen, work towards it. So we have to ask ourselves, what does this look like? What does the air I breathe, that's its smell? Again, can I get from one bus stop to the other? Can I make sure that I can ride a bike and not feel like I've got to duck and bob and weave because we've got too many cars on the street? Can I make sure that I can live in a society where I don't have to fear for nuclear annihilation? And by the way, all that nuclear waste and garbage that has been shuffled and dropped all across my state from the Manhattan Project and these Cold War consensuses, we got to clean that up too, not add more to it. And so, yeah, I, you know, all these things, it's so related because I got to make sure that we clear out that waste so that I can have guaranteed housing for our folks, so they can make sure they have a job to pay for that housing. It's guaranteed union protections. And if anything happens, they can go to the doctor because it is guaranteed. And that's not single issue. That is you. You are the issue because you deserve it all. And I think that's what we need in this moment, my friend.
Let me ask one more thing. We got a couple minutes left. Your platform seems so strong. End the wars, Medicare for all, $25 minimum wage, job guarantee, 12 other things we haven't mentioned. I'm not an expert on guns, but when I look at your platform on guns, it seems like more tweaking around the edges. You regulate this, supervise that. Like, why can't we ban the damn things? Like, this is, you know.
Listen, and that is that I am someone, my friend, they set records in Kansas City, Missouri for the last, we're a little bit down now. And by a little bit down, we're like two or three murders away from being on pace from a record breaking year last year, which was a record breaking year before and the year before and the year before. I have lost too many folks to gun violence, both at their own hand, but also completely at the hands of someone on the other side of a gun. I'm not a gun guy. I am unapologetically just not a gun guy. And so when we get in there, yes, we're going to ban these weapons of war, these assault rifles. But I also would like to do that. Not a lot of folks are talking enough about, you know, we can't even have buybacks for weapons in the state of Missouri. Like, I think we should make it so that every state would allow for a buyback program. You know, I think we have really good minded folks who are like, I don't need this. I've got folks who are saying, you know what, this is nonsense. Yeah. You know, we can have reasonable, not even just reasonable. We can just have just common sense gun reform. And what seems like tweaks, my friend, are going to end up being monumental. And I think that we are closer than we even know. With the NRA's importance is waning, similar to that of AIPAC. I mean, all these corporations, these fronts, it's not in good fashion anymore. And we need to use this as an opportunity to take on all of them, including the NRA, and making sure we get these weapons of war off the street. We have to.
I hope you're right. I'm glad you're running. If you are listening and are also glad that Hartzell Gray is running for Congress, you can check him out and get in touch at hartzell4congress.com. Hartzell Gray, thank you for coming on Talk World Radio.
It has been an honor, my friend. I hope this is the first of many more. The start of a beautiful friendship, I hope.
Me too.
This is Talk World Radio. I'm David Swanson. Take action at rootsaction.org. Help end war at worldbeyondwar.org. Read or listen to today's Peace Almanac entry at peacealmanac.org. All past shows can be heard at talkworldradio.org. Talk World Radio is produced in Charlottesville, Virginia, and syndicated by Pacifica Network. There is no way to peace. Peace is the way.